Hey, everybody. Join us for the fourth season of the Writer's Process podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. And this, you know, season, we have a different thing. I have a new co-host joining me, Colleen Tidd. How are you doing, Colleen?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And we've got our guest here who's going to be joining us for the first time on this podcast. Please welcome Joe Bizarro. How are you doing, Joe?
Chirp, 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 chirp. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here tonight, you guys. This is awesome already.
Yes, we're really excited. This is going to be fun. So first and foremost, since this is the writer's process, before we get into that like part of it, like where we talk about the process of writing, let me just ask you though, like, did you always set out to be a writer, or was that something you kind of fell into?
I wouldn't really categorize myself specifically as a writer per se. I just think that's kind of part of the creative process when you are a filmmaker or an auteur. You know, it's important to be able to do all of those jobs. So, you know, I wouldn't really, you know, I have been kind of writing all my life. As a kid, I wrote, you know, poetry and songs and music. So I guess organically, I've always been a writer, but I've never really considered myself one in that regard, I guess. If I was to meet someone, I wouldn't introduce myself as being a writer, even though I guess I am a writer.
Screenwriter too of that.
Yeah, essentially. I know that was kind of a strange answer, but yeah, you know, I don't think of myself like that. I think of myself more as a director, and even more than that, I kind of see, you know, filmmaking and art and creativity. For me, it's always been, you know, just a huge part of my life. So I see it as kind of a bigger picture thing. I really don't kind of even associate myself with really any of those titles: director, producer, writer, musician. You know, if someone was to ask me who I am or what I do, I would probably just say that I am an artist.
Oh, wow.
I like that title.
What would you say, Colleen?
I love that title, an artist. It covers it all.
It kind of covers it all. And, you know, if you don't want to have the conversation, you can kind of leave it there. And if you want to, you know, get a little deeper into what it is that you actually do, then you go from there. But you know, I've written many things, many scripts now, shorts, pilots, stuff that I haven't shot, you know, a ton of stuff that obviously I never even got shot. And like I said, music, you know, all kinds of different things. So I guess, you know, I forgot the question.
Well, that's fine. It's fine. We pretty much got the answer. So right. It works. So, so that kind of brings me into, like, you say you're not really a writer, but you write, you know.
I do write my scripts, yes.
Yeah. So have you ever, you know, thought about, since you do also direct and do filming, do you also want to ever direct somebody else's film, or do you just want to write your own stuff to direct?
I actually would be very happy to direct someone else's film. I do find myself to be kind of a bit of a perfectionist and kind of picky, so I'd probably be pretty picky about it. But if I had a collaboration with someone who I respected or I liked their script, I would be super into directing for someone else. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. I bet you would have a lot of fun with that, you know? Like, you know, especially somebody who got your sense of style or sense of like humor and all that stuff.
Those buttons alone, like that is one stylish jacket you've got on. That's perfect. I love it.
Thank you. And this is kind of a nod to, you know, really all of the horror hosts across the country, mm-hmm. but especially to, you know, Gulardi was a big, you know, kind of inspiration for me. I grew up in Cleveland, so we had Gulardi and Big Chuck and Little John and Frank and Drac and the Ghoul and the Son of the Ghoul and Froggy and all of these great, you know, we have such a rich history of horror host personalities. And when I created this character and started this brand 5 years ago now, I kind of wanted to give a nod to that and pay homage to all of those great Cleveland super hosts too. I forgot to mention. But I wanted to pay, you know, kind of an homage to all of those Cleveland horror hosts that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So thank you for the compliment on my fashion.
Well, it's awesome. And knowing that is so symbolic too, it makes it that much better. That's perfect.
Especially since, well, you say you've done horror hosting, right, yourself?
I haven't. I've really wanted to. I've been playing with the idea of it. I've definitely had some ideas for. I wanted to start actually a YouTube channel here during quarantine, but I changed locations of the place that I was living, so it got kind of difficult to do that. But I've always wanted to kind of get into that world. I have a huge fondness for it and the nostalgia for it. I just love that world. But, you know, luckily there are still people that are doing it. And there's still a lot of people, you know, I know that I was just actually in Ohio a couple of weeks ago and someone was doing a late night viewing. And I know these guys they're still doing it all over the world. So I'm happy to see that that's still a thing. And so maybe I should just leave it to the professionals.
Well, you know, and Joe Bob's kind of bringing it back again. So it's nice to kind of see that it's not dying. As I was talking to Colleen before the show, I'm starting a channel for Roku called Sick Flick TV. And one of the things that we're having is a horror host section. You know,
oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. And I mean, right now it's just people we're friends with that do it. But like, I mean, anybody who wants to do that, especially what I love is the public domain horror ones, you know, or whatever, like old school, like Elvira and Vampyra and, you know, that kind of.
And a lot of those movies are so hard to actually, for me, a lot of those movies are hard to watch because they're so dated, but it's not even really about the movie. It's about the experience outside of the movie. And that's what I love about horror hosting and whatnot. And congratulations on your upcoming channel. I looked at it on Indiegogo. I know you guys are on Indiegogo right now.
Well, we just finished. We got the Indiegogo. We should be, quote unquote, getting the money soon, you know, or whatever. So,
right.
But yeah, we're really excited just to be diving into getting all that like set up. And
any money is good money, really, when you're producing low budget stuff like.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how much you guys got, but it looks like you got something. And so hopefully, you know, I did an Indiegogo for Brides of Satan, and thank you to everyone who supported it. But, you know, it didn't really do that well. Those are really hard to run. And, you know, you really just, it's a lot of work for very little payoff sometimes. But sometimes just getting that couple thousand dollars gets you over the next you know, kind of roadblock that you have to get through to keep shooting your movie or making your project. So it's, you know, it's definitely a great thing, great tool.
Oh, exactly. I mean, as you know, from your Brides of Satan, Indiegogo, you know, it's just sometimes things don't work out the way you're like hoping or whatever, but you just make do with what you can, you know, basically like,
yeah.
So you just finished it, right? If I'm correct, you just finished filming.
Well, yeah, we actually finished filming in February, but we had some serious hiccups with our audio department, unfortunately, and we had some issues that we had to get through and fix. And so we actually were kind of back. We had our backs against the wall last week. We were still waiting on some final audio post, and we were doing our automation. AFM had started a couple of weeks ago with the pre-entries, and you know it officially started last Monday, and on Monday we were still cutting. On Tuesday night we were still cutting. So we actually didn't even enter American Film Market until like Wednesday morning. So we were kind of, and this year was the first year that it was virtual, which was interesting, but we were kind of like nervous. We were kind of like, is this even worth it? Should we even do it? You know, it's about an $800 fee for kind of just the base. And we just did it anyways. And luckily, we just signed a distribution deal yesterday that we're looking forward to, that we found a partner that we think is going to be, we think it's a good fit.
Awesome.
Well, I can say the trailer is phenomenal. I watched it a few times past couple of days, and I'm excited to see it when it comes out. So, and that's on YouTube, right? The trailer.
Yeah, the trailer for Brides of Satan. Yeah, Brides of Satan official trailer 2020 is on YouTube right now. And you know, yeah, it's so we're looking. So like I said, we signed distribution yesterday with a company called Darkside Releasing. I believe that's the exact title. They're out of Canada. A guy named Vince Diamato, if I'm saying his name correctly. Hopefully, I am. Just super sweet guy, really gets it, really loved the movie. specializes in genre movies, erotic thrillers, all kinds of just kind of culty, kind of off the wall shit. And I can say shit on the show, right?
Yeah, you can say any cursing.
Okay, thanks. I don't try to use too much profanity, but every once in a while. So we got Vince with Dark Side, and we're pretty much looking to have the DVD and the Blu-ray. We're probably going to have two different tiers of Blu-rays, a kind of more economical version and a more upscale version, double disc, special features, all the bells and whistles, fancy packaging. We're probably going to have that out in probably the next month, 5 weeks. So somewhere in mid-December. And then we're looking 1 to 3 months, we're going to be on VOD and Amazon and iTunes. So probably in February, March. And then by mid-year, early summer, we will be on DVD, hopefully, you know, nationwide in all of the major basic retailers.
That seems to be about right. You know, that seems to be about the what it's normally is like VOD comes out early and then the DVDs come out like 6 months or
the ones that are actually going to be that are wholesale and retail. We luckily through Vince and through Darkside, they do a lot of their stuff in-house. So they're going to be able to author our DVD for us and get it right out from their website right there. Out into the world right away. So I'm really excited that he was able to kind of meet my request to get the movie out as quickly as possible, because I know there's a lot of anticipation and demand for it right now. A lot of people are really excited about it.
Well, good. They should be. It does look like Colleen said, it looks amazing. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. We had a great cast. I mean, everybody just really contributed so much of their time and energy for, you know, so little money. It was very, very, very low budget. And we called a lot of favors in, but, and it was a journey. There were a lot of, I know I don't want to get too off track because I know you want to talk about writing, but filming it was just a journey.
No, it's fine. Especially since this is the first episode of whatever, just feel free to, and you're, as you said, you're more of a artist than you are just a screenwriter. So feel free to talk about the other stuff that goes involved in it.
I'm happy to talk about the writing process though, too, because the writing process of this is very unique. So if you want to focus on that, that's fine.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's get right into the beginning of that. Like when did you originally come up with the concept for this?
So the concept probably already now at this point is, I would imagine, 6 or 7 years old. And the original concept, when we titled the film Brides of Satan, and I have a creative partner that I write with and who does most of my cinematography. His name is Noel Maitland. So he was involved kind of all through the beginning. And when we first got started, Brides of Satan was actually this movie about this guy whose girlfriend gets captured by this like sadistic gang of mutant bikers. And he has to travel through all these scenarios and kind of go through hell to save his girlfriend and kill this evil gang. And that was like where it originally started. Now, the irony of that is a couple years ago, an amazing movie came out called Mandy.
Mm-hmm.
And we both loved it. I've saw it in the theater multiple times, but it was shockingly so similar to our original plot that we were like almost heartbroken.
It always happens that way. You've got the best idea and it's already been made. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah. So that's kind of where it originally started. And then, you know, that script changed drastically, and then it turned into this movie that felt, I don't even know how to really describe it, but it felt kind of like a, you know, Dusk Till Dawn kind of Rodriguez Tarantino kind of thing. And we had all these scenes. We were supposed to originally shoot it in the desert. We wanted to do it out in Joshua Tree because we had made a movie out there. And we were like, oh, it'll be cheap to go out to the desert. It'll be because we can shoot for free in the desert, and we can stay in these shitty hotel rooms, and everybody will just live in this hotel room in perfect harmony. And, you know, we'll just get this movie done. And so that was kind of our plan. And then as we started getting the talent that we wanted, like I got Joanna Angel on board and she started helping me get some other adult actresses, Rachel Rampage, et cetera. We kind of realized how scheduling wise, how difficult that was, and how you can't just like stick everybody on a bus and send them to the desert. So that whole idea, that whole script, the whole first 90-page script kind of just got more or less just like thrown in the garbage and reset. We kept some elements, we kept some character elements, we kept a few jokes, but then it got rewritten. And I hate to drone on and on and on here, but this really is kind of an interesting story. After that revision got done, we started another revision, and then we shot our first day. We put a bunch of money into making the first day. It was like a 15-minute cut. We put a little preview on YouTube. This was years ago. We kind of put up this little kind of Red Band trailer, we called it, which was like the intro. Then, as it went on, the script morphed again and changed again. And before we knew it, probably by the third day, we shot this film in 8 days. By the third day, we realized that, like, you know, fuck the script. And what we did was kind of unorthodox. And what we did was we had now multiple days, and we would look at our footage, and we'd look at our dailies, and we'd look at kind of the rough edit that we had going that we kept building. And we decided to abandon the script altogether. And then we basically, we would write for the next day, and we would try to make sense of everything that we had, and we would write the next round of shooting, which, you know, in our world, it took so many years because we were self-funded. So we would, you know, shoot maybe twice a year, or, you know, so we would write for the next day, we would get that in the can, and then we would look at what we had, and then we would write for the next day. And we did that all the way to the end of the movie, and it was about 8.5 days.
Damn, that's incredible. Yeah, that's,
pretty weird.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed like the cast that you have, you know, is all the cast on IMDb the actual like cast for sure?
You know, I haven't checked the IMDb recently, but I do, I want to say thanks to Lisa Lee. If you're out there, Lisa helped me fix the IMDb up, and she's been kind of getting it cleaned up and worked out. And also, yeah, so hopefully that's getting rectified here shortly. Do you guys hear that?
Yeah, I hear it a little bit.
Give me 1 second.
Is that the dead bodies he was talking about?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm a little worried.
I know. Not all of them were dead, apparently.
We're just saying not all of your dead bodies are gone, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, some kind of ghost in the hallway.
Saw the light flickering, too, back there. It's getting a little creepy over here.
It's perfect.
Perfect for, I guess, Brides of Satan, anyway, you know?
We're really excited, you know? Like I said, we got that. All right, I'm just going to – I'll be hot for a minute, but I'm going to turn this off.
Every time he talks, they're, like, coming after him. Because, like, notice he's, you know.
All right, hopefully that fixes the problem.
Okay. You had Mindy Robinson in your film, right?
Yes, like, sir. Mindy is fantastic.
She's a doll. I was supposed to work with her on a project, and unfortunately, you know, money didn't go through on that at that time. Hopefully one day I'll be able to message her and be like, hey, we're back, you know, in production.
You know, for Mindy, I would say, I said this before and I'll say it again. I like to refer to her as the Kevin Bacon of cult cinema, because she's just been in so many movies. You could do like a 7 Degrees with Mindy Robinson.
Oh, I was just watching Episodes, the TV show on, you know, on Showtime, but it's on Netflix right now. And there was an episode with that had Mindy in the background. And I was like, what in the world? Like, she was at a, like some kind of party, and she was like playing some, she was a featured extra there. But it was weird, cause just seeing her like pop up like that, it was like, hey, I know her. You
and
know?
That's what I love about Mindy, is that she's kind of like never above. She's kind of never too good for anything, you know? She's like, she's just kind of always down to do it. She's down to work. She's got a good working attitude. She was a fantastic. She was just a great pleasure to work with on set. Very easy, always prepared, always on time, always early, always easygoing. And, you know, just, she was just great. We were so lucky to have her. And, you know, it was also cool because, you know, I've seen her in so many things before we did Brides. And we actually kind of got a hold of her through, once again, I just kind of wanted to give a shout out to people to help me along the way. My buddy Lance Polland, who was a director of The Doomed and Werewolves and Heat. And he does a bunch of stuff with a company called Bad Amigo Pictures.
Nice.
And he got us Mindy. And she was just, like I said, she was just a pleasure to work with all across the board. And just so lucky to, and grateful to have her.
Okay. And you also worked with my friend Sarah French then.
Yeah. I wish we could have had a bigger role for Sarah. I didn't know her too well at the time. I knew her husband, I believe, Joe Netter, from conventions in the past. And I think I approached her and we just, we have a very small, she has a small cameo. I wish she was in the movie more, because she actually, her career I've been seeing is just going up and up and up and up since. And congratulations to Sarah, because she seems like she's doing a ton of stuff and working really hard.
I guess it kind of sucks sometimes when a person is like, that their career is finally going up, and then all of a sudden, projects, come out and everything. And they're like, oh, they promote. I mean, she promotes everything. She'll very gladly promote anything that actually gets finished and gets put out. She's very happy to have out. And I bet she's really excited about Brides of Satan.
Yeah. I mean, even her small role is great. And that's the other thing about the film is there are a lot of small roles. There are a lot of cameos. That's kind of the way we set the movie up. We wanted to try to feature all kinds of people from different walks of lives. And there was a lot of people that we had kind of in mind, or we were in talks with, that we didn't get, that we wish we would have gotten. We were originally supposed to have Francesca Kitten-Natvedad, who was one of the original, she was one of the Russ Meyers girls from all the old Russ Meyers movies. And she was originally supposed to be in that first scene. There's just plenty of people that along the way, at one point, Reggie Bannister from Phantasm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's awesome.
We were in talks with him. He was originally supposed to play the Lenny Lester character, who I eventually casted with an old man that I saw at a karaoke bar.
I love it.
Sometimes your expectation is up here, but your budget is here.
Did you audition the old man at the karaoke bar?
You know what? I've never held auditions on any of my projects in my life. I would love to someday. You know, maybe the next movie I should do that. But I usually just I meet someone and I get a vibe and I get kind of their thing, and I just take chances. And a lot of times I have no idea if they can act or not. And I try to work with that. This guy, actually, John Troyer, who played Lenny Lester, the old man, turns out he was a soap star. He was on all these, he was always an extra. He'd been on sets. He's been around. But I don't even know. He's probably 70, 80 years old. And he was drinking a beer, singing a Roy Orbison song, Blue Bayou, at a karaoke bar. And I fell in love with him. And I was like, this is the guy. I bought him a beer. We dragged him out we shot that scene for 2 days in a junkyard.
Oh,
we
wow.
In an Airbnb together. And he would be up later than all of us every night wanting to hang out. And so John Troyer was great. He was the old man but that was supposed to be Lenny, originally Reggie Bannister. And so I get so sidetracked. I'm sorry. But there's just so many anecdotes to the movie and how this got made. And it was really interesting process.
Definitely. Yeah. I guess, did you contact Reggie originally and it just didn't work out? Or?
Yeah, we were in talks with him and his wife. Once again, it was a connection through my friend Lance, because Lance had also done a movie, him and Vito Tribuco. I'm sorry, Vito, if I'm saying your name wrong. They did a movie called Bloody Bloody Bible Camp.
Love that movie, by the way.
Which is still on Amazon Prime, I believe, to this day. So go ahead and give it a watch if you haven't seen it. Anyone who's listening out there. And so Reggie was in that, and that's where that came from. So we were in negotiations, and then once again, we just didn't really have the money. We didn't have enough money, and we were just kind of like, is this desert idea a good idea? Why don't we just keep it in LA? And that's kind of where that's kind of how we continued on.
Definitely. Colleen, did you have something you wanted to ask?
No, I just think it's phenomenal, the no audition process and just kind of having a vibe for people. That says a lot about the direction of your movies, and it's incredible, actually. It really is. So, no, that's awesome. More props to you, seriously.
And thank you. And, Malice McMunn, for example, she's a very popular kind of Hollywood icon. She's got her own clothing brand. I believe it's called Malicious Creatures. Sorry, Malice, if I fucked that up. But anyways, you know, she's kind of big in the Hollywood scene. And once again, super sweet, amazing, nice, lovely person. But like, you know, we knew we wanted that look. We knew we wanted that vibe. We knew we wanted to have someone who kind of had some social media pull, who had some attention, and we got Malice, and she was great to work with, but I didn't know she could act.
Right.
And you know, I think, you know, I hate to even call this out, but at one point she was going to quit. Like towards the end of the movie, she wanted to give up because she thought she was doing a bad job. And she would always say, like, I'm not right for this. I just can't do this, the voice that you want. I can't do it the way you want. And we were literally on our last day, and she showed up to set, and I've already got a million things going on in my head. And she says to me, like, you know, I don't think I can do this today. You should have someone else play it. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? You're absolutely out of your mind. You're doing a great job. Like, you know, and so luckily she stood through, and the ending is, just, the whole day was great. She did a great job. And especially for what this is, I mean, this isn't, you know, Life is Beautiful or The Kite Runner or whatever. I'm trying to think of some highbrow movie.
Yeah. Right.
It's called Brides of Satan, and get over yourself. Like,
let's right.
And so luckily she did. She followed through, and but that was a scary moment for me.
Oh, absolutely. To get halfway through the film, even closer to the end. And
that was the last fucking, it was the last scenes. She's going to go fight. She's going to go summon the devil and fight the main character. And it's like, and you know, it's also kind of an obstacle when you're making somewhat of an action movie. It's kind of an action movie. There's action. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a stunt coordinator. We don't have a choreographer. We didn't take a day to audition this shit. We're mm-hmm. like, you know, we're like, what can we pull off? How can we use camera trickery to make this look interesting? And then, you know, by the end of it, I remember that day specifically, we kind of shot an order that day. And we had the ending, we shot the ending last. We were in overtime at the location. So we're paying a shit ton of money to be there. And we're like, we got to get done. We got to get out of here. And at that point, this is the end of the movie. And we're just like, all right, cool. How about this? Throw the camera over here and just run at her like this and throw her against the wall. And, you know, and before you know it, you're like, you just really just improvising.
Yeah. Right.
And it can be really stressful when you get to that like 13th, 14th hour, you're in overtime and you start your art starts being sacrificed. You start kind of screwing up. Mm-hmm. It starts to lose its value because you're tired and you're worn out and you're in a hurry. And so that's kind of one of the rough things about independent filmmaking. You know, you got to kind of just do your best.
Absolutely. Yep.
Definitely. So I do want to get back to the writing real quick and talk about, because you said your process is different and everything before, but also as far as like you as a writer, not just on this film, but on anything, right? How do you start like your ideas? How do they just come to you? Is there something that you, you know, you do to make it happen, or just, does it just happen gradually?
Sure. You know, well, I think a lot of it is, you know, all of the movies that I've seen throughout my life over the years. And then, you know, sometimes when I'm now I'm trying to be more mindful about what distributors are looking for, what companies are looking for, what's popular, what's hot. I would say in the past, I didn't really care about that. And now I'm trying to be a little more mindful about that. Also, the big thing that I think comes into play is, you know, where's the money going to come from? Do you have money? Do you think you have money? Do you have an investor? Are you doing this yourself? Are you planning to do it yourself? Are you confidently doing it yourself? Because then you got to like, you can't write Star Wars.
Right.
You have the budget for Brides of Satan. So it really kind of stifles you. And because then it really also kind of kills your creativity, because you're like, well, I want this cool scene to happen. But then you got to look at logistically, like, how does that work? How do I do that? Special effects are hard. They take time, they take money. So And these are genre films where all this stuff's included. And if you don't have special effects and cool shit, then it's kind of a boring movie. So I guess the answer to that is like, I always try to like look at, I think a good example, a good quote that I heard once was, and I'll misquote it, but it was through Robert Rodriguez. I read his book, Rebel Without a Crew.
Great book.
And he says like, you know, in the, he says like, when they made Desperado, they had a turtle, you know, a guitar case and a bus or whatever, the three things that he had. And I really liked, I think that's a really valuable thing for young filmmakers or new filmmakers to think about. What possessions, what things do you have in front of you? Do you have a lake house? Do you have a truck? Do you have a van? Does your brother own a collection of replica guns? Whatever it is. And you kind of look at, you know, the things that you have. So that to me is part of one of the things that I always think about as far as getting my ideas. Yeah. I mean, they can come from anywhere, but I would say that a lot of my style is like, I do like to kind of combining things. So like, you know, this thing that I really liked and this thing that I really liked, and they don't really make sense together. And like, how can they, you know, so like Brides was like, I really liked the Russ Meyer female empowerment, kind of like all these women kicking ass. If you notice the film, like almost all of the characters are females, all the strong characters leads are females. Mm-hmm. And that was done intentionally. But then I also have this like 80s punk, Streets of, you know, what was that movie?
Streets of Rage.
Any of those movies with the Streets of in the title, the Warriors, all that
Streets
shit.
Of Fire. Yeah. There's exactly. Tons of those things.
All of those over here. And then the Russ Meyer over here and the female empowerment. And it was originally supposed to be a motorcycle movie. And then you just kind of like, for me, I slapped those two things together.
Nice.
And that was kind of what I wanted to accomplish visually. There's a bunch of other elements that kind of come into play too. That movie turned out kind of grindhousey, but like,
nothing wrong with that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I say the process for me, like finding new ideas. I have ideas come all the time. And so I'll have a notebook with just like movie ideas or titles or like one-liners or sentences. Like I might have 20 or 30 of them. And then what happens is one of them that gets written 3 years ago or one of them that gets written this week, wherever my brain is at on whatever day it is, they all get relooked at and rethought. So like last night we were talking about, you know, making another cheap movie for like 20 grand, something for 20 grand, 20, 30 grand. And we were talking about making a witch movie called The Ceremony of the Witch. And now this is something that we had written 2 years ago, but it's like, wait, it feels right now.
Mm-hmm. Especially during right now. You
right,
know,
right.
You know,
like this is the time
to make things as cheap as possible. I actually was talking to a filmmaker the other day, for like we sat down for coffee and we were chatting, and he said that a lot more investors are putting stuff up for like 50 grand and that's it, like 50 grand or lower. And that is where like a lot of the budget is going, which unfortunately for just writers, screenwriters, not a lot of money, you know, to be had with that budget. It's like 2% of the budget or something like that is what you get.
You know, it's not a lot of money for anyone, unfortunately. And I hate to sound like a cynic, but like, there's really not a lot of money in independent film. I mean, you've worked on independent, but it just, unfortunately it's really tough. It's really tough unless you've got a major studio backing you. So many people are kind of going to, I don't want to say get screwed, but like do favors and do things for free and do things for the real and do things for experience. And that's just the nature of the business. You know, I worked in, you know, reality TV and television, and there's much better money for me as a camera operator working for someone's production company, shooting a reality show that I can't stomach, than there is, you know, when you're like a grip or a camera operator on an independent film. It's just unfortunate, but that's just the reality of it. So I did hear that same number around 50, 60 grand is kind of like the cap now on indie things, and what people, which is kind of like the safest number that you can stay within. And that sucks, but that's also just like, okay, it's a limitation. For me, I can make a movie on that money. But would I like to have more, of course.
Yeah. You know, and that's just the nature of the beast. That's what's going on right now in the industry. And that's fine. I mean, like you said, doing a project maybe that you're not happy like doing, but you're doing it just to pay the bills for now. And then your actual passion project will be the one that's like less, you know, that you'll get like nothing for, but you'll be happy once it's out. And, you know, you can say that I did that.
Well worth it. Absolutely.
Exactly. So Colleen, you had another question that you wanted to ask specifically.
Now, I wanted to bring up, before I get to that one, actually, I wanted to bring up the writing to budget, because Joe, you said that perfectly. That was one of the biggest struggles I had starting off with writing. I'll never forget a dear friend of mine and business partner came up to me and said, Colleen, I want you to write this script. I'll pay you this much to write it. This is my idea. Wrote the script, brought it to him. He loved it. He comes back and sits down and goes, Colleen, it's amazing. But you just wrote a script that takes a $5 million budget, not a $20,000 budget or $15,000. So it is really difficult. It really is. But yeah, that's. I'm really glad you brought that up to everyone.
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, it's nice to be able to like live your dreams in your brain on paper and like see all the stuff that you want to see. But man, I mean, filmmaking is hard, and it never turns out the way you saw it in your head anyways, ever. You know, it's unless you storyboarded it, which I don't really believe in storyboards, to be honest with you. Like, if I had the budget and it was a $2 million movie, I'd hire a storyboard artist. But like, they take time, and then you get to the place and you're so frazzled with what's going on with the day and all the things that are happening, and you stop looking at the paperwork anyways, you know? And so, exactly. No, we're not talking about storyboards, but yeah.
But that is a part of writing, and a lot of people do prefer that method, and not that it's a bad method by any means. It's just...
I think it's budgetary.
Well, yeah, yep.
I just think, like, if I was on that kind of level where I could have a storyboard writer, I would love it. I would absolutely love that. But I just know I'm not going to go ahead and spend the days or weeks or any of the hours to make them when I get to set, and shit's going to be on fire when I get there.
Right.
And like, things are not going to work out the way that we have intended. And now we've got this other solution that we have to find. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
I feel the same way about writing too. Honestly, because so many times I'll write something and then I'll just kind of lose, you know, like I don't like to outline, you know, I hate outlining, or treatmenting, unless I have to show it to somebody specifically. I hate doing it, because the problem is I change my mind while I'm writing. I'm in the midst of everything. I have no, I think it was like Quentin Tarantino who once said, like, what he does is he like writes the characters to talk to each other, and then he just lets them talk. You know, right? And I really feel the same way when I do it. I like, when I start writing, I start letting the characters evolve into who they're going to be. And if I had an outline or something, it's not going to be stuck. You know, that's not going to be the thing I'm going to end up doing with it. And it's just going to be a pain in the butt. So I just always, you know, I never do that. And so I agree with storyboards. I never storyboard, because I just don't have time when I'm filming anything to just sit there and say, okay, we have to do it exactly like these storyboards say we have to, you know? Because when you're on set, you might be like, oh crap, that mirror is over there. I didn't realize that was there. We're not going to be able to shoot from this direction anyway. So that storyboard art is out, you know, to begin with. And so it's just, I mean, it's great if you have the budget and you have the time and people can come on set and do it as, you know, as you go or something, you know, but who has that kind of resources unless you're Hollywood, you know?
Right.
Well, you know, I think we are about to, I think this conversation is going to get even more interesting, because what you just said was great. I think the Quentin Tarantino line is fantastic, and how he talks about his characters developing on their own and living their own lives in the script. But I'm completely the opposite of what you just said. I believe that a treatment or like an outline is like the foundation of it. And so, you know, to me, that is the number one thing, useful tool in my toolbox, is I believe in a good kind of solid, and everyone's got their own process, right. But I believe in like a solid kind of like skeleton of where you know it's going to go, the beginning, the middle, the end, you know, your arc, all of that stuff. And, you know, that's the most important thing. And things can change. Like in Brides, we would have thrown half of that skeleton away and then done surgery on it and created a new transmorphed body. And it's, you know, it's this Frankenstein thing. But in general, to me, that's my process. Mm-hmm. Is I will, before I write any script, I will look at all of the key points and look at the beginning and the middle and the end. And I think that for me, and I'm sure for a lot of writers, coming up with an idea, mm-hmm. and thinking about what it's about is the fun, easy part. But, and then writing the first 25, 30 pages is the fun, easy part. Once you get to the second act, end of the second act, okay. The ending is usually the fun, easy part too. But it's like that whole pages, like 30 to 75 are tough. Mm-hmm. That's where movies
need some sort of a timeline or something to move it along, right?
That's where movies suck. And you know, and I always, so you know, there's, I'm sure you guys have heard, since we're talking about writing, there's a very famous book that a lot of writers have read or have heard about called Saves the Cat.
Saves the Cat goes
to the movies. It's actually a really great book and I recommend it. A lot of people hate it and talk shit on it, but I think it's great. It's a good read. Now you don't have to just completely live your life that way. But what that book says is that there is a formula to everything, whether you believe it or not. Now, that's not exactly true. There are films that don't follow that formula, but it's good to know that formula.
There it is.
Saves the Cat. Mike Snyder, who I believe is deceased. God rest his soul. Anyways, you know, so you don't have to like completely live within that formula, but it's good to know that formula. And I remember in Saves the Cat, there's a chapter called like Dark Night of the Soul. Everything is lost. And that's right around like the 3/4 part of the movie. And I feel like in so many mainstream movies, this is what defines usually a good movie versus a bad movie for me. When I'm watching a mainstream movie and that Dark Night of the Soul scene happens where the friends break up or the buddies get in a fight or whatever it is that happens, and then they fucking hate each other before they get back together. I just hate that shit. And unless it's done quickly, it gets over with, or it's like not there. And so I love to watch a mainstream film that skips some of those tropes or those chapters and says like, oh, we're not going to do that. We're not going to have this fucking predictable scene. Like I get fucking pissed off listening to my temper change. It's just so predictable and like, it's annoying. I don't mind if movies have a format and a formula, but it's like, fuck, does every single movie have to have the breakup at 68 minutes? I fucking hate it.
I don't think they do. And I think that's kind of what's happening with movies today, is things are changing where people are really trying to, in a way, get away from structure to the point where it's not exactly that, you know, maybe the Dark Night of the Soul happens, you know, in page 30, you know, and shit. And then things get weird and crazy crap happens to kind of make things, because
those are the directors that I want to know about. If you
right.
have, yeah.
the examples of those directors, I'd love to see their films, because.
Well, I feel like Rob Zombie does that, you know. Maybe not necessarily in page 30 or whatever, but like, I mean, when you look at his scripts, things are just so wacky and weird throughout the whole thing, you know? And people like say nasty things about him or whatever, but Devil's Rejects is by far a great example of a perfect written script, you know, or whatever. And The Dark Night of the Soul, happens pretty early to those, to the main, to the heroes or whatever, you know, where, you know, so, I mean, I think in a way that that happened. And Quentin Tarantino switches things up all the time because his structure's all over the place.
He's an exception.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, people do it. There are people. It's just, you know, a lot of the quote unquote writers, you know, today have to, you know, make sure that
that's how you get your movie sold through to the big studios. But you know, it's funny, once you read that book and once you see how, to me, it was like, it was mind blowing. Like once I read that and saw how it was laid out, I never watched movies the same again. Ever.
Same here, because I'll be looking at it from, I did it for, you guys ever seen the movie The Girl Next Door? You know,
Emile Hirsch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Emile Hirsch, and because there's two Girl Next Doors. There's the one. There's a horror
like,
one too.
He's like, if you don't fuck her, I'll kill myself.
Right. Well, that scene right before that scene, about the page 25 mark or whatever, the first act ends exactly right there. Right. Then everything, if you look at it, it is structurally Save the Cat structure. Everything to the Dark Night of the Soul, where they lost the where everything is lost because they lost the the tape at the end, right? They thought everything was fine, then they lost the tape, and all of a sudden, like, where did that? But it did the exact thing that you wanted, which was that was quick, you know, that ended up real quick of like, okay, we solved this. Like,
I love that. I love
2 minutes, you know,
like I love that in movies. Yeah. I would still say that even with people doing things that are different, I would say 60 to 70% of stuff out there is still following more or less that formula.
The formula. Yeah.
They get stuck in that rut of it. And,
Well, I mean, like you said, it's, you got to do it to sell to the studios, because the studios, basically, I feel like they look at that, and they kind of, I don't know how many of them actually follow his beat sheet perfectly or not, but they, I mean, it does seem like the readers or whatever, which is where you go to first in Hollywood, is you don't go to the studios, you go to these readers, right? These readers, they read like a million scripts, you know, a day, you know, or whatever. So they're reading your script and they're going, all right, does this happen at this point? Does this happen at this point? And then if it doesn't happen the way that the readers want it to happen, they throw it out and they never show it to the studio people because they don't think the studio people would be interested in it. So I'm guaranteeing you, it's like they do see that, you know, and that is...
Unfortunately, I think it's a way to succeed in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think even as an indie, like, unless you've got something that's just so out there, or so controversial or so attention grabbing, and we can talk about movies like that, but like you kind of have to follow that a little bit. Now with Brides we didn't, but you guys heard my story, it was impossible to. But I also do think that with Brides we had something visual enough and beautiful enough,
it got picked up.
Yeah, and I think it'll be well received. Obviously there's going to be people that hate it, there's going to be haters, all of that, but for the money that movie took to make it, you know, it's going to be a success. It already is.
Well, the haters are the people that aren't going to be your audience anyway, you know. Exactly. Those people are going to be people that probably wouldn't like it just because the word Satan is in the title. Right. You know, I mean, and that's terrible. All right, so Colleen, you did have one last question, and then I think we're gonna just wrap it up here. But,
no, just kind of a silly question, Joe. Wondering if you had any routine type of things as far as your writing goes. Do you have any rituals that you follow? Do you sit in a dark, creepy room at night, or drink a glass of tea, or watch your lights flicker as you?
No, I do. I'm very much a creature of comfort. So no, I do. I'm pretty weird. I'm a bit obsessive. I'm very kind of clean and neat and organized. So I can't be in a room that's cluttered before I do anything creative, whether it's editing or writing. Yeah. So I have to clean my space. You know, I'll if I'm going to sit down, I know I'm going to sit down for a while. I'll make sure I've got a good lunch planned. I'll make sure that I am freshly showered, have my tea. My room is clean. My place is set up. And then I typically, I know this sounds crazy, but I'll usually have like my TV on with the volume down, and I'll watch horror movies all day long. I'll like just let images happen while I'm going. So I might look up and go, oh, what's that? And that can distract the hell out of you too. But it's still kind of part of my process. Wine doesn't hurt. Having a couple glasses of wine while you're writing and like getting comfortable. But yeah, I would say that's kind of my, I do have a little bit of a process there.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I love that. I always love kind of hearing about people's habits and whatnot, because there's a great book. I don't know if you guys have read it, but it's called 101 Habits for Highly Successful Film Screenwriters. And
it has
everything from everybody's point of view. Like it's got a bunch of people like Ed Solomon, who did Bill and Ted and whatnot. And then, you know, people like Steven DeSouza, who did Die Hard and Street Fighter, which.
Oh, I loved the Street Fighter movie.
I do too. But it's going to be eventually on my show, Hollywood Knockbusters, that I do. Because it is one of the movies that got so panned by people, but it has such a loving audience. Like, people absolutely adore that movie, but like it did not do very well.
Of course not.
Of course not. It had Jean-Claude Van Damme as, you know, Guile.
Wasn't Alyssa Milano in it too?
No, she was in Double Dragon.
Oh, that's no, I'm thinking of Double Dragon. That's the movie that I actually love.
Oh,
was really? Okay. Oh, okay. Dragon was so cheesy and schlocky. I love
that. Yeah, that was definitely with the Robert Patrick and you know, whatnot. It was just ridiculous.
I also wanted to say to Colleen, there's one more thought that just popped into my mind.
Yeah, what's
part of my process is that sometimes, like, you know, I'll read. This is also helpful for me. I'll read like horror movie review books, or like, you know, I have a stack of like this weird like cult mania books or whatever, books about. That are just blurbs about films. Yeah. And it'll have like, and there was one book that I was reading that my friend loaned me called House of Psychotic Women.
I love it already.
This weird book of just like all these weird 60s and 70s, like crazy women movies. And every time I pick that thing up, I flip through it and I'm like, that would be fun to remake. That would be fun to rip off. That would be fun to steal from. Like, and then I never really do, but that's to me a big part of my process too, where I'm like, what was this other weird thing that existed? You know, I don't know. Or like, can I take this movie from 1930 from House of Psychotic Women, and can I take this alien movie and can I put those two things together?
Right. Yeah. Alien Psychotic Women. I think that works. Why not?
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's kind of like me with ID Channel. I do the same thing that you do with turning the volume down, but it's ID Channel that I have on in the back.
Oh, you watch those killer housewife shows.
I'm upset. Yeah. Yeah, I am 100% obsessed with that.
So yeah, genre bending, I think. Genre bending for me is just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think it's kind of my thing. It's my bag.
They actually shoot a few of those ID TV shows in Virginia. And so I was on a couple, which were fun.
I've seen them all. So
if you've seen FBI Criminal Pursuit, then you've probably seen. I was a John, and so I was there for the set to be an extra. Right. Yeah. Excuse me. So I was called, but I was supposed to be at the end of the whole shoot, which would have been like 8 hours. So they're like, hey, can we get you into like a spandex kind of leather outfit and do like something where we won't see your face, because we'll see your face later, you know? And so they had me as like an S&M John, and then they had me later as like a John who bought a hooker with a credit card. So that was fun.
You gotta find these clips and put them up on your.
I'm trying to.
It's hard to find that stuff sometimes.
I know. You'd have to buy them and then like rip them or something.
Right.
It's so, you know, and there's so many cool. And I hate saying, you know, there's pirating things, you know, or whatever, but there are a lot of ways to rip your and it comes in handy when you're doing like reels and whatnot, of ripping your YouTube and putting it into like an MP4, you know, when like they're on somebody else's page or something, you know, I'm able to do that. And thankfully, you know, like thankfully there's these sites. But all in all, I am just so pleased to have you. Like, I was glad that you agreed to come on and everything, and that you were excited. You wanted to do this so badly. So,
yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate you squeezing me in. I know that we were going to do this like in a month, but I wanted to promote the movie. Like I said, I just signed the deal yesterday, and it'll be out, you know, I would say mid-December. By early January, Brides of Satan will be available in one form or another. I believe it'll be on darksidereleasing.com. It's probably going to be the earliest place to get that on Blu-ray and DVD. And then, like I said, it'll be on VOD, and it'll be kind of nationwide in stores, you know, a few months.
Like Walmart and stuff like that, yeah.
Hopefully Walmart, Barnes & Noble, all those great places. And I was surprised because I was worried about the title actually kind of passing their standards and practices. And
I think Satan is okay.
Yeah. Satan is okay.
I don't know. The Bible, right? That has it in there somewhere.
Because, like, I think they changed, like, they changed one person's movie from, like, devil something to evil, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so there
that
might.
That happens, yeah.
I mean, which is weird because I think it's because Walmart is very, like, family oriented.
Well, yeah, of course. So we were worried about that. And so also we had, like, working titles in effect, like it was going to be called Brides of Mayhem or Brides of Chaos. And it, you know, even when we shot the opening scene with Rick Gallagher, who plays the host, we shot it. I remember that day we had him say Brides of Satan, Brides of Chaos, Brides of Mayhem, just in case we needed to replace that. That'll never happen. But
oh, wow. So Walmart has agreed that they'll just
not yet. No, we haven't gotten to that point, but we kind of like, and I think that's kind of a good piece of advice for filmmakers is, if you have a controversial title or you're not sure, you know, shoot those pickup lines, shoot those, those extra things and put those like extra bits in there just in case you might need them later. I mean, I learned so much from this process. Like there's just, you know, make sure you get your deal memo from your crew before you start. Make sure that you have all your releases. Make sure you have your chain of title. Try to get those location releases. Like try to cover yourself as much as possible instead of doing it on the back end. But it's hard when you don't have an AD or you don't have enough people to handle the paperwork. Mm-hmm. You're the director and you're the writer and you're running around and your phone's ringing. It's tough, but I just, you know, I can't stress it enough. Find someone who's organized to take care of those things for you because you want to make sure you have all that stuff. You just feel more confident when you go to sell.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess what's next for you?
You know, I really want to see how this does. I wish that I could say I was going right into production of my next movie, but I'm kind of financially not in that kind of place right now since I self-funded this myself. Anyhow, it would be great to find some kind of, even if it was in the $50,000 range, some kind of financial support. We have plenty of scripts waiting and ready. I'm ready to write. I'm ready to do something again. I would love to direct something for someone else. I'm available to work in that independent world. So it would be really great to get onto another project here soon while this is kind of getting out there into the market. But I can definitely assure you that whether I'm on someone else's project or starting to find money for, or even just save money for my next project, which like that's how I did this one. We never ended up having any investing or any investors or anyone really come in. So it was just, you just save up and keep going. And it gives you more control at the end of the day. You really control more of your film. You get more of your profits. And so maybe that's the thing. Maybe the next movie, you know, I've got to dig graves and deliver pizzas until I get enough money to make the next one.
Not at the same time, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, you get off one ship and start the other.
No, I'm just saying, like, you're not digging graves and delivering pizzas. Like,
he's delivering pizzas to the graves. That's what it is.
That's even better. That's the movie I want to see right there.
Yes.
Someone once asked me what I do for a living, and I said, whatever it takes.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good title right there.
That is.
Well, thank you so much. If you guys would stick around, But I want to say thank you once again to Joe. So much for coming on. This is awesome. I really had a pleasure chatting with you again. And Colleen, thank you for the first time co-hosting on this. So,
I enjoyed it.
Yes.
This was your first show on here. Oh, that's
awesome.
It was.
So hopefully.
I'm honored.
No, it was an honor meeting you. So thank you for letting me be a part of
this. Yeah, find me on social. Add me. And so I'll just drop my social really quick. My Facebook and Instagram is at Joe Bizarro Studios. And we also have an Instagram and I believe Facebook for Brides of Satan movie. So go ahead and add those, like those, subscribe to those. I'm on YouTube as well, Joe Bizarro Studios, where you can watch the trailer. Perfect. And thanks so much for having me, you guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And everybody, tune in. We'll be back next month as well. And we're just going to keep this going. So thank you once again. And we can't wait for Brides of Satan to come out.
Absolutely. Like I said, just about a month away, maybe 4 or 5, 6 weeks away, we should be out there on DVD, darksidereleasing.com, and then look
for it. Get it before it comes out on the bigger ones, because that's where it counts, right? Like the smaller stuff, so you can start really getting your money back, you know?
Anywhere you watch it is fine with me. But Jonathan, Colleen, thank you. Stay safe and stay strange.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.